Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
And welcome into the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Hope everybody had a fabulous weekend over the weekend. Joe Rex Road, no rain delay to begin this program here today. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. 2 hours of baseball yesterday and 4 hours of rain delay with, I think, maybe about, oh, I don't know, a tiny light sprinkle in that 4 hours. There was some lightning, though. And of course, it was a very bad day for Vanderbilt baseball.
Gotta love the weather delays with the sun shining on the outside. But better safe than sorry. No question about that. We'll get into the Vanderbilt part of this coming up here in just a few minutes. Lots going on this weekend. We got lots to get to on the program here today. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean will join us at 7 o'clock. Looking forward to that. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 at 8 o'clock. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him and Nashville Predators, so looking forward to that as well. Joe, we begin with the NBA Finals last night, and the Miami Heat tie things up on the road. They win 111-108 last night. At one point in the game, Denver had a 40-14 run. And I was just like, oh boy, I just think the Nuggets might be a little too much for this team at home. The Heat come up with 36 in the fourth quarter, and they played by some statistical measures. And I need to go back and see exactly where I saw this, but apparently the most efficient fourth quarter of the entire NBA season last night by the Miami Heat, and they win 111-108 on the road, and they've evened this thing up, and now, at the moment, have home court advantage, heading back to Miami for Game 3 coming up on Wednesday night.
Pretty fantastic performance, and part of that efficiency, I guess, is Duncan Robinson not being able to miss a shot.
Yes.
Whatever he's doing, you know, driving to the cup, finishing lefty. Remember that guy in college was like, well, he can't dribble or drive or anything in the Big Ten, but he can hit some threes. It's amazing to see what he's done. And, man, this is exciting. I really was – I mean, I said it, though, after game one. Like, you know, they got good shots. I mean, it's that was not like – it was just a terrible shooting night, and it kind of played out. But I still wasn't sure, you know, could they actually get a win in Denver? Can anybody actually get a win in Denver? I mean, we all have to stop doubting the Miami Heat.
Yeah, they looked great last night. Now, Jimmy Butler is pretty clearly hurt, and he's playing through it with the ankle right now. But 21-9 last night for him. He 7-19 from the floor. Bam Adebayo with two really good offensive games in a row. Gabe Vincent with 23 last night. But, Joe, I think the story was that the Heat defense, and look, Denver put up 108, so it's not like the Heat played like some shutdown defensive game last night, but it was pretty clear that they were not going to let Jokic have 5,000 assists last night like he did in the first game. They made that adjustment. They kind of left him alone when he got the ball. Now, he didn't end up with 41, but I think that's the poison the Heat are choosing, and they're not going to let him distribute the ball and try to, you know, find open three-point shooters. At least last night they didn't do that. Only 4 assists for Jokic last night, and that was, to me, one of the differences in the game.
Yeah, and I think it's the way to do it. And of course, they played that zone a lot. But they just basically are, I mean, I think you have to live with Jokic to the rim, or you know, hitting his assortment of little shots in the lane. I mean, he will miss some sometimes. You know, it's like you think about the late in the game, the Nuggets make this big run, 11-2, like in a blink of an eye, and one of those is like offensive rebound, and then he just a perfect cross court, you know, diagonal leading Murray into a three. that's what he can do. But like you said, man, I feel like he had 10 assists in the first quarter of game one, you know? So not letting that happen, huge, huge deal.
Well, and Kevin Love in the starting lineup last night, yeah. We knew he'd probably get in there. And, you know, offensively, he didn't do much, but he did have 10 rebounds. And the Heat were a plus 18 when he was in there last night. So I imagine you'll see some more of Kevin Love as they move forward here. And then, you know, I will say, I mean, Kyle Lowry, who has not been really all that good this year for the Heat, has played some important minutes in these first two games of the NBA Finals and has looked good so far. So big win for the Heat last night. They even things up at one. Game one of the Stanley Cup Final over the weekend as well, Joe, and the Vegas Golden Knights win. They win 4-2 in a game where Florida got the start they wanted. Florida tied things up 2-2 at the end of the second period, and then Vegas with some really good territorial play in period three. Maybe the save of the year by Aiden Hill that we saw on Saturday night with the paddle of the stick, and the Golden Knights up 1-0. But I still, like, if you're Florida, and Paul Maurice basically said this after the game, played okay, just got to breathe a little bit. I think Florida, I think this is going to be a really good series. I feel more confident after watching it the other day that this thing's going seven games.
Well, that would be nice. Yeah, I mean, you know, Vegas is very, very tough. You know, at home and man, it's I think back. You know, among the players, it's funny we've talked about Matthew Tkachuk, but remind me. At one point, were they not sort of possibly in there for Mark Stone?
Yes, I believe they were.
Yeah, when was that?
Oh, that was probably 4 years ago, 3 years ago, yeah. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Stone and Tkachuk, just imagine what the Preds would be right now.
Pretty good line.
Yeah, that'd be a decent start, but no, I hope you're right. I mean, I hope that both of these series, I mean, they're both kind of, you know, I mean, some of these playoffs have been a little sweepy, but hopefully we got two great ones early in the early stages here.
And then on the baseball side of things, Joe, Vanderbilt loses yesterday. Their season comes to an end. We'll get into that here in just a few minutes. But Tennessee advancing to the Super Regional. They take down Charlotte yesterday after Clemson was eliminated. And what a baseball game on Saturday night between Tennessee and Clemson. Tennessee was down to their final strike. They hit the home run. They take the lead. Clemson ties it up in the ninth. And in the 14th inning, the Vols get the win on Saturday night and only used three pitchers in the process of that 14-inning game, which was pretty incredible to watch that take place, while Clemson used 10. Tennessee gets the win against Clemson. Clemson eliminated yesterday, and Tennessee handled Charlotte pretty easily last night to advance to the Super Regional. So Tennessee, Joe, the only team left from our state that is alive and advancing to the Super Regional.
Yeah, pretty wild. And that Clemson game was an all-timer of a game. I mean, Tennessee lost in the 10th, and then they unlost, yeah, with the review. You know, you got bases loaded, no outs. A really fantastic job by Christian Moore and Maui Ahuna turning what initially was not ruled a double play. That first base ump, boy, was he rough that night for you know, in the Clemson Regional. But you know, that was the right call. They reviewed it. I mean, Chase Burns, because they threw three pitchers because they had two who threw complete starts. You know, Chase Dolander, who was really good, and then Clemson got to him, and then Chase Burns, man, I can't say enough about him. And you know, just the lineup, like you said, last strike for Blake Burke, first of all, then for Zane Denton down to the last strike against, you know, now Denton wasn't facing their ace, but their ace was amazing, Caden Grice for Clemson. I mean, you got the sense as that game went on, it was like, you know, whoever wins this, obviously, you know, you, now you're one win away. Whoever loses this is going to have a rough time tomorrow turning it around, not just because it's a quick turnaround and all that, but because the emotions of that game. And, you know, they threw out Clemson's best hitter, which I thought was kind of weak. I don't know exactly, yep, what came out of his mouth, but I mean, there was so much of that game. If the ball, I mean, the Vols are, I think, going to be home this weekend. It's Southern Miss and Penn play tonight. Now, Southern Miss wins, then it's just this subjective thing where they will pick between Southern Miss. They'll pick between the Hattiesburg Super Regional, yeah, and the Knoxville Super Regional. I think it will be Knoxville. It's not an absolute lock. If Penn wins, then it will be for sure. But probably a super regional in Knoxville. I mean, no one, you guys, especially a few weeks ago, would have seen that coming for this team.
Yep, no, and now they've advanced to the super regional. And honestly, the way, you know, the regional matchup is what it is. We talked about the importance of pitching heading into it and that you're going to need to pitch well. But honestly, like, this is where it starts to be for Tennessee, where I think it's their bread and butter. Like, a super regional, just a series, and you got to win two out of three. Like, I think this could be – this is right up Tennessee's alley in terms of their pitching staff.
Yeah, well, yeah, I agree. I mean, certainly you've got, you know, Lindsey, Dolander. I mean, Drew Beam was terrific yesterday.
Yep.
I mean, it's, you know, you're on the verge of you need Drew Beam – early to keep you alive and then figure it out for a game and then figure it out for another game. And you go from that to Drew Beam, get us to the supers. So, you know, those three guys and then again, Burns. But the thing is, I think even at like the format of the regional, which is the same as Omaha, they have so many arms. They didn't even use a couple key pitchers this last weekend. Seth Halverson, by the way, deserves more mention too for what he did. So I think arm wise, they're built for anything. It's, are they going to hit? And yeah, I think they'll hit at home, but you know, if they can carry over what they did at Clemson to Omaha. Yes. Yes. I just did that. I've jinxed them. I've moved ahead.
Thank you.
Seriously. But I mean, this team is good enough to be playing for a long time.
Yep, they are. And they're at least playing to the super regional. The only team left in Tennessee that will be doing so, which means that Vanderbilt will not be. And Vanderbilt's season comes to an end yesterday after a lengthy weather delay as well. We'll get into that. What went wrong with Vanderbilt? And where do Tim Corbin and this program go from here? Take your thoughts on all that as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Presented by TJ Anderson, Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they are referred to so often. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. So, Joe Rexroad, you spent a lot of your weekend over at Hawkins Field watching the Vanderbilt Regional, and most people, us two included, expected Vanderbilt to get through this regional, to host the Super Regional, and to have a great opportunity to advance to Omaha once again, but it was not to be. Vanderbilt loses to Oregon on Saturday, and yesterday, after a game and then a very lengthy weather delay and the resumption of the game against Xavier, Vanderbilt falls 2-1 and they lose and are now eliminated from postseason play. So, Joe, you had a front row seat to Vanderbilt all weekend. What kind of stood out to you? How did this happen? How did Vanderbilt get to here? And what do you make of Vanderbilt being out before the Super Regional?
Yeah, well, it's obviously a huge disappointment for Vanderbilt. You know, one thing that really hurt him in the two losses, I mean, Enrique Bradfield is their catalyst, and he just went cold. I mean, he went 0-for-8 in those two games. You know, he's kind of lifting everything, and big moment in yesterday's elimination game. He's trying to you know, leg out an infield single, and he just, you know, they get him by a fraction of a step. It kind of comes up limping after that too, but just couldn't. You know, couldn't get going. This lineup had come to life, and look, they scored 7 against Oregon in the, you know, in the loss on Saturday, but they couldn't. They still missed a lot of big opportunities. They left the bases loaded twice in that game. Just the timely hitting wasn't there, and that's really the biggest thing. You know, the pitching. I mean, Sam Loboke yesterday was great for Vanderbilt. I mean, the pitching was great, but Xavier's pitcher just. You know, sometimes that happens. You know, you get a pitcher who has just got your number. So that's one thing. And then, look, you know, you get a good start from Devin Fetrell to get the initial win against Eastern Illinois. And you're hoping Hunter Owen, now that's your 1-2, because Carter Holton, your ace, is out. He's hurt and he's out. And, you know, basically you're hoping – I mean, I think that he probably would have only had a real chance to return if they had gotten to Omaha. But you know, you need two starters you can rely on for sure, and that would have been next weekend. And Hunter Owen, who also has been hurt, just didn't have his best stuff. Ryan Ginther, who's been hurt, comes in, gives up four runs in his inning. And, you know, it's just, it's baseball. So the unpredictability is already built in, but hugely disappointing because, you know, that, I mean, Oklahoma State gets bounced out of their regional. So, I mean, I didn't see how things turned out. It might've been Dallas Baptist, which by the way, apparently looks like a pretty good team, but
put on, you know, like 17 a game. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I'm sitting here and be like, oh, yeah, they would have handled them. I mean, who knows? They might have come in here and, you know, put 10 runs up back-to-back games. But it's just tough for Vanderbilt. This is the first time that Vanderbilt has gone two straight years without getting to a super since basically, you know, early in Corbin in 09 was the last year that they had consecutive years of not getting to a super. So – It's been a tough go since 21, getting all the way to the final game with a chance to win a national championship. And, you know, now Enrique Bradfield, I mean, he didn't officially say it, but he's gone, you know, he's gone to the majors. So, you know, this is a special team in the eyes of Tim Corbin and his coaches. It was also, I would say, not a ridiculously talented team. A lot of good players on this team, you know. A great player in Bradfield. I mean, Bradfield right now is ready to go be one of the best center fielders in MLB. I mean, you know, it's going to take him a while to get there in terms of, you know, at the plate and everything, but he's just amazing. And they just, you know, they have a lot of good players. This team didn't have the great players that a lot of his teams have had.
Well, it was kind of a weird year for them from this standpoint. They end up being, you know, exactly where you would expect Vanderbilt baseball to be, and that is one of the elite teams. They were the number six seed overall nationally. They win the SEC tournament. So, like, if you were just kind of tuning in for postseason baseball, you'd look and you'd say, oh, well, Vanderbilt, I mean, they're sixth seed overall. They just won the SEC tournament. It's right exactly where they usually are. And then you watch the way their season unfolded. And number one, I mean, I think injury is probably the main story of the season with the injuries that they sustained. And just the Jekyll and Hyde almost at times that they were. There were times that they looked great. And obviously they figured a lot of things out with that Arkansas series to close out the year and then got into tournament play. But, I mean, Tennessee, they got hammered and got swept that weekend. They couldn't beat Florida for whatever reason. I mean, they had some moments where they looked rough this year. But finally, the bats had come alive. And in the SEC tournament, they started to look really good swinging the bat. The first game of the regional, they started to look good swinging the bat. And then it just all kind of came crashing down for Vanderbilt after that. And like you said, Joe, this is two consecutive years where Vanderbilt baseball has not made it to the Super Regional. And that's not something that we're used to around here. So, what does this all mean for this program, a program that has been, if not the gold standard, one of the gold standards in college baseball for the past decade plus, and now you've got 2 years with kind of a little bump in the road in terms of postseason success in the regional. What do you think this all means for Tim Corbin and this program, and where do they go from here?
Yeah, well, look, first of all, I think at this point, at the end of every year, I think if you're a Vanderbilt fan, you have to at least – be prepared for Tim Corbin to retire. I don't think he's retiring this offseason. I will say, you know, I wrote the story about Maggie Corbin last week, and the quote in that story was, "This might be the end of us." And that's Maggie Corbin talking about NIL and the portal and all that. So I think a year ago, they had serious discussions about, do we want to keep doing this? You know, I mean, look, you get in your 60s, they're grandparents now. I mean, you know, it's we're not far. So, I don't think that he's going to be done, but I don't know if it's a long time, you know, that Tim Corbin's going to be the coach of Vanderbilt. You know, the thing about, first of all, it's been real fun to see the Vanderbilt Tennessee Twitter battles that have, they'll just continue and continue and continue. But, you know, one thing that I see, like, some Tennessee fans about how they're recruiting suffering. You know, the thing about Vanderbilt is they're recruiting too well lately. So one issue they've had is they've had some, you know, in a lot of classes, you have a guy or two who it's like, okay, he decides to come to school instead of taking the money, you know, going to the major, or, you know, not the majors, going to the pros. You know, they've had a lot of guys in the last few years just that they've had committed who decided to go to pro ball. It's like you gotta find that player that's really, really good, but not quite that good, you know. But you know, it's like you're gonna still recruit the best of the best. I think Vanderbilt's still gonna be able to recruit, you know, at a very high level, and they are recruiting at a very high level. You've got to just have a little bit more pop, you know, in that lineup, and a little bit more guys who are, you know, like 3-year players who are going to be drafted after that third year. So I don't, you know, like the Tennessee Vanderbilt angle here is interesting too. We had a lot of discussion about that in the press box this weekend, as we looked out in the outfield and saw Jared Stillman in his little Xavier shirt, you know, starting the wave in the Xavier fan section. It was quite a sight yesterday, but the idea of like Tennessee, now that Tennessee's, you know, is where they are, Vanderbilt, what does that mean for Vanderbilt? And, you know, like Robbie Weinstein, of course, you know, 24/7, and he's, you know, very plugged in recruiting. And like, you know, it's so rare that they even cross paths in recruiting. There will be. There'll be the superstar kid who checks all the boxes in this state. Yep. Where I think Tennessee's more of a player now than they were for a long time. But I mean, Vanderbilt, so many kids from California and, you know, New Jersey and whatever. I mean, like, and Tennessee's recruiting nationally too. So I think they're both like going to be, as long as Corbin's there, you know, they're both going to be circling around this. And, you know, look, those two teams could have met in the final series in Omaha. They really could have this year. And I think that's what's exciting is that, you know, there's going to be more years, again, as long as Corbin's around, where that's a possibility. So I know right now it's absolutely time for Vanderbilt fans to freak out and doom and gloom and whatever, you know, fire the hitting coach or whatever you want to go. As I say that, I think that's ridiculous, but that's where if a team has struggles at the plate or all that, fire the hitting coach. I mean, believe me, as a Detroit Tigers fan, you know, I'm well acquainted with this idea, but, you know, I think things are fine. You know, it is a big year next year when you miss the Supers 2 years in a row. But the pitching next year looks really good. And some young guys, I mean, R.J. Austin is going to be a tremendous player. Davis Diaz is going to – I mean, they've still got some really good players who are coming back next year.
What about this question from Chuck? And I knew we'd get this question, and we talked about it even in the aftermath of Vanderbilt winning the tournament. But Chuck on the text line asked, would Vandy have been better off to have rested their pitchers as much as they can during the SEC tournament? This is from Chuck on the text line.
See, I hear you, Chuck, but here's the thing. You know, the funny thing about that is the one guy who they really, I think, well, really the two guys who struggled for them on the mound that they needed more from actually needed more work. And that's one thing Corbin was talking about this weekend too, you know, this idea, like Hunter Owen, because he was hurt, like, you know, he said it would have been good to have more runway for him. I mean, other than that, like Loboke, for example, is a guy who, you know, came out there and in Omaha was really good yesterday. It gave him exactly what they needed. Patrick Riley, you know, he hit the batter. And I know there was a lot of debate about should you review it, should you challenge it. I mean, you know, Bulger, the catcher, didn't really protest it, and Corbin didn't challenge it. If you look at the video, there's no way it's getting overturned.
Right.
I mean, I assume it skimmed him, you know, a bit, but regardless, you know, that was a tough thing for Patrick Riley, but he was great. Other than that, he was really good. I mean, so the arms were fine. I mean, the bats went cold, and like you said, that this team has had that in stretches, and it just happened at a really bad time.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on Vanderbilt being eliminated yesterday, Tennessee advancing to the Super Regional. Your thoughts on that on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll have Gentry Estes from the Tennessean coming up at 7 o'clock to weigh in more on that as well, so looking forward to that. Coming up next, we'll also get into the Tennessee Titans, including a question I have about Joe Rexroad about whether or not this Titans team can transition on the fly. We'll tell you what we mean by that. Coming up next, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see Brian Adams with very special guest Joan Jett and the Blackhearts at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Saturday, June 17th. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Brian Adams with special guest Joan Jett and the Blackhearts coming up at Bridgestone Arena Saturday, June 17th. This contest brought to you by Green Trees Company, a family-owned cannabis company and dispensary providing high-quality legal THC products for anyone seeking medicine, relief, or wellness, located in Hendersonville and a new location in West Nashville, and available online at greentreescompany.com. So, Joe, we'll have Gentry Estes coming up at 7 o'clock. We'll get into a variety of different topics with him, including Tennessee advancing to the Super Regional and Vanderbilt being eliminated before Super Regional play again. So looking forward to that coming up at 7 o'clock. In the meantime, we transition to the Titans. And I have a question for you that I think is really the question that they're going to have to identify as they move forward here. And it's simply this. I think we all feel good about Ryan Tannehill being the starting quarterback this year. He's going to be the guy, at least to start the season, and we'll see how the season goes and what happens after that. But as the Titans begin this transition at quarterback from Ryan Tannehill to Will Levis, whenever that takes place, whether that's at some point this year, whether that's in 2024, which is probably the most likely scenario in my mind, my question is this. If you're the Tennessee Titans, can you remain competitive in that transition? Can you be a competitive team in the AFC South going from Ryan Tannehill to Will Levis based on the roster, based on everything else? And obviously, if you lose Tannehill and Levis is taken over at quarterback, you would assume, and maybe this is a wrong assumption, but I assume that at least in the short term, that's probably a little bit of a step back at the quarterback position. We'll see what the future looks like for Derrick Henry beyond this year. I mean, there are a lot of questions with the Titans roster beyond this year, even at offensive line. They've made all these moves at offensive line. And, you know, with the exception of Nicholas Petitfrere and Skoronski, who they've drafted, I mean, you've got Dillard coming in there, Brunskill coming in there on basically a one-year deal. I mean, this offensive line may need to be replaced and repaired after this season as well. We'll see what happens on that front. So as the Titans begin this transition from Tannehill to Levis, whenever it is that Levis takes over, how confident are you, Joe Rexroad, that the Titans can remain competitive while making this transition?
Well, I think that comes – I mean, you're right. There's other things – there's a lot of ways it could go in a lot of positions. I mean, they need to – you know, they need to find another long-term difference maker at receiver. And – I think maybe they're set at tight end. They've got, you know, I think defensively, you've got some turnover potentially coming too. You know, like if Kevin Byard doesn't have a lot of time left, you know, you got Jeffrey Simmons locked up. But there's a lot of questions all over the roster that could answer yes or no on that. But to me, it's simple as Levis. I mean, if we're going to make the Chiefs comparison, and I'm not making a player for player
comparison.
Please do. But the Chiefs, you know, the Chiefs comparison is made the playoffs, still really good with Alex Smith, Mahomes sits, and then Mahomes is ready, and you're better. You know, I mean, look, if Levis turns out to be a good pick, I mean, the thing about Levis is, obviously, he could be better in, like, year six than he is in year three. But I do feel like he's got – the learning curve for him is shorter, so that – by next year, if everything times out the way we think it will, and he's the starter as of 2024, with a year behind Tannehill, already having played in a very similar offense, I think we're going to see what he is, right? Like, I don't think it's going to be like this whole, well, he needs another year now to adjust to this, this, and this. I mean, I think what he is as a player is going to be start to become quite clear in 2024. So the transition is successful if the Titans made a good choice. You know, if his accuracy and everything about his game are put together, then, you know, I'm not saying it's just going to be boom, Tannehill or greater than Tannehill starting in 24. But I think that, like, the what Will Levis is as a player is going to be clear earlier than maybe some quarterbacks coming in this league.
I agree with you. Now, you brought up the Kansas City example, and I think it's a good one. Obviously, that's what you're shooting for if you're the Titans, is that you found your guy and that eventually it's an upgrade on Ryan Tannehill and that you're competing for Super Bowls. Now, the one thing I will say
about the Kansas City situation, and I know people are just going to hear this. They're going to be like, really, you don't think Patrick Mahomes is very good? Not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that once when he took over, he did have Travis Kelce, and he did have Tyreek Hill available to him immediately. And I look around at the Titans right now, and look, I don't know what Chig Okonkwo is or is going to be. Chances are he's probably not Travis Kelce. I don't know what Treylon Burks is going to be. Chances are he's probably not Tyreek Hill. So, look, Patrick Mahomes is great. He just won a Super Bowl with Juju Smith-Schuster as his number one wide receiver. So we know how great Patrick Mahomes is. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I'm just saying, like, the transition at that point, I think that offense was way more tailor-made for success than this one currently is with the Titans.
Well, I agree with that, but another reason or another part of it is that Andy Reid,
yes,
and obviously he's had other OCs who were good and have gone on, and you know, Kafka and Bieniemy and whatever, but Andy Reid is an offensive whiz and arguably the number one guy in the league. So a lot of this answer comes down to the new OC the Titans have, who, by the way, is changing the offense, and by all accounts, I mean, basically doing the Houston New England offense, you know, as opposed to the newfangled Shanahan offense the Titans have been running. So how good is he? How good is Tim Kelly? There's some evidence suggests he's pretty good with quarterbacks if you want to give him credit for Deshaun Watson's best football as a pro.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's – but if he ends up being a great hire like Arthur Smith was – two hires ago, well, that's a big part of this too.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we bring up like the Titans comparison and the Preds comparison all the time, and the Preds with the competitive rebuild or the transition or whatever you want to call it. I mean, they tried to do it on the fly, and it didn't really work, right? I mean, they were a middling team. Now, they remained, I guess, competitive. They made the playoffs, and then this past year it all kind of fell apart, and they went to the trade deadline, and now they've moved in a younger direction. With the Titans, I mean, you're essentially in NFL terms trying to do the same thing. Like, you're trying to go from your quarterback with Ryan Tannehill to your quarterback with Will Levis and not miss a beat and still compete in the AFC South. And some teams are able to do that, some teams aren't. We'll see what happens with the Titans standpoint. But it is like, you know, if you time it up right and you get one more good year out of Ryan Tannehill and you feel like Will Levis is ready to go after that, I do look at this roster, and on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, Jeffrey Simmons is still young in his prime. He's not going anywhere. Hopefully Harold Landry is healthy by the time training camp runs around, and you know, he's got another 2 or 3 years left in him of good football. I mean, you could, you know, Roger McCreary, I think you and I agree, played pretty well for the most part in his rookie year. We'll see about Christian Fulton and all that. But the point is, like, I look at the defensive side of the ball, and I think there are building blocks where they could continue to be pretty good over the next few years on that side of the football. Offensively, we'll see. I mean, this is a huge year for Treylon Burks. This is a huge year for Chig Okonkwo. I mean, Joe, we could ask this same question in 4 months, and Treylon Burks and Chig Okonkwo could just be going nuts for the Titans out there, and we feel great about the transition from Tannehill to Levis. Now, to your point, it's all going to come down to Levis. Like, eventually, that's what it's going to be. Is Levis good enough to take this team and elevate them to where they want to get to, and that is being a Super Bowl contender in the AFC? The answer is going to be with him, and I get that, but certainly it would be great if the supporting pieces around him took the steps that they need to take this year.
Yeah, and I could see it. I think Chig looks primed to me to be pretty darn good as a second-year pro. And Burks so far, Burks looks really good. I'm excited to watch, you know, some mini camp with the whole team, maybe get a little bit more of a sense, you know, for his development and all that. You know, there's also the whole, like, who's the running back? That's kind of a big deal. You know, Tyjae Spears, is he – with Tyjae Spears, it's like – I mean, I just said, you know, hey – from now on, Vandy fans, you know, Tim Corbin, you have to be open to the idea that he's going to consider retirement. I mean, Tyjae Spears, I guess every year we're all going to be like, so is the ACL, the lack of ACL going to matter this year or no? Right now, he looks really explosive.
Yeah.
But still, like, if next year you know, Spears Haskins or Spears. I think it's Spears. I think Haskins, the guy who he's got something to prove right now. But whatever that combination is, well, how much of a difference does that make? You know, if you don't have 22 back there.
Oh, it's a huge question. Now, one thing I do want to say real quickly on the Will Levis front, because this has been all over the place, and I saw some headlines over the weekend from like NFL stories of, oh boy, Will Levis is struggling out there at Titans OTAs. We talked with TD last week. He had a bad day of practice. He missed some nets in practice. Let's not freak out over one day of a quarterback not being able to throw the ball into a square net, please. That'd be great. A lot of NFL stories over the weekend of, oh my gosh, Will Levis had like five throws in a practice that he missed over the weekend. He's done. I mean, I don't want to turn into like the most avid Will Levis defender here, because I made my feelings on him pretty clear in the draft process. But I mean, let's not freak out over one day of practice in June, or I guess at that point in May in the Nets. Please. Thank you.
Okay, fine, but now we're in June. Now we can freak out. Well, this week, let's
if he
let's
misses
freak
the
out
Nets this
throw.
Week, then yeah. That's a different story.
You know, he will never be able to start a game if he has one bad practice. That's how it goes.
Yep.
I will say there was one throw where he not only missed the square, he missed the entire net. And I was like, ooh, okay. So maybe I'm freaking out.
Well, look, he does. I mean, it's look, a year ago with Malik Willis, it was like, wow, what a throw. That was, whoo. And then it's like, oh, where the heck was that one going? Consistent accuracy. You know,
it's very important.
Will Levis needs some, yeah, he's got to work on it.
615-737-1025, our phone number. So we're throwing the question out there. Can the Titans remain competitive as they transition from Ryan Tannehill to Will Levis as their starting quarterback, whenever that may be? Some of you have already weighed in on our text line. We'll get into that coming up next. Take more of your thoughts. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tomorrow at 6:05 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds taking on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, the AAA affiliates of the Miami Marlins. Sounds Baseball, 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knazovic here with you on this Monday morning. We are talking Titans. We will get back into that here in just a second, but I do want to pass along some quick breaking news in the NFL, Joe Rexroad. This is coming from Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. The Bills are making a late splash in free agency, agreeing to terms with former Rams standout pass rusher Leonard Floyd, a one-year deal after 9 sacks a year ago. So Leonard Floyd heading to the Buffalo Bills to add to an already loaded defense, Joe Rexroad.
Rams to the Bills. That's been a trend a little bit with some defensive key defensive players. Any number on that?
I have not yet seen a number, but okay. Apparently a one-year deal. So we'll see what the number ends up being on that front.
Now do DeAndre Hopkins, Bills.
Let's get them all.
Sign everybody.
DeAndre Hopkins still out there. We'll see what happens on that front. Throwing the question out there, Joe, can the Titans remain competitive in the transition from Ryan Tannehill to Will Levis whenever that takes place? Cam on the text line says that answer is yes. $100 million in cap next year, if used correctly, can completely overhaul the offensive weapons. That starts at wide receiver. T. Higgins is target number one. This is from Cam on the text line. We'll see if the Bengals let T. Higgins go. If Joe Burrow has his way, Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase are going to somehow all end up being there.
Yeah, and, you know, that is one of those situations where I think the cap is not fake, but I think
– malleable?
You know, I think, yeah, it's malleable, exactly. So it's going to be tough, I think, to get him. But the thing is, the cap's very real when it comes to – when you have all the cap space the Titans are about to have. I mean, I know Jared would be like, oh, who cares if you're 100 over? Just fix some contracts. No, it does help to have that space and to be able to freely operate in the market. And I do think that next offseason, you're definitely going to see a different kind of – I think you're going to see a different approach for Rand Carthon and the Titans in terms of going after some free agents.
Alex from Montreal says not having good draft capital for next year might hinder that transition, but having tons of cap space isn't a bad thing with a rookie quarterback. And the Titans, as we sit here today, to Alex's point, don't have a ton of draft picks available to their disposal next year. But the cap space, again, something that Alex is bringing up.
Herb from McEwen on the text line says, 2025, the Titans trade Tannehill. The team he goes to beats the Titans in the Super Bowl. It's the Titans' luck. This is from Herb on the text line.
That'd be something. Let's see. Who would that team be? Like, what's Tannehill's next team?
I don't know. A lot of I did see there was a Bleacher Report article this weekend, Joe, that suggested that the New England Patriots should trade for Ryan Tannehill. Maybe it'll be the Pats.
I mean, you know, if Belichick remembers when he was with the Dolphins, did not go well for him against Belichick's team, especially up there. But
did have the miracle also in Miami, though. That was awesome.
And also, you know, the Patriots were a lot better than the Dolphins overall. That's kind of a factor here. How about Ken and Waverly? We must also think about the coaching changes after this season. If the Titans are crap, Levis will take over, likely with new coaches.
They'd have to be pretty bad.
Yeah, it'd have to be pretty bad, and like, it'd have to be like they, you know, like they had good health luck, right? And I mean, I guess like if it's a bad year for Tim Kelly, you know, like really bad, and it's like there's no reason for it necessarily. Like, you know, the main players are out there and they're just really bad. Then you would look at it and say, okay, so Vrabel, that's two straight bad OC hires. You know, like I suppose you could start going down the rabbit hole, and you certainly can't anymore discount Amy Adams Strunk doing something unpredictable, but I don't know, man. I think that seat is icy right now.
Well, speaking of rabbit hole, I mean, if we go by a column that you've written before, this could all really come down to one day next year. It could come down to Michigan, Ohio State, and if Ohio State drops that sucker again and they're out of the college football playoff, maybe Vrabel's walking into Columbus. Ohio State still has not won a game, nor has the Titans, since you won that article, or wrote that article, by the way.
Well, since I wrote that article, two things. One, I feel, and this is, you know, after talking to a few people, I feel less confident that Ryan Day would be fired if he lost again to Michigan. It's hard for me to believe, but I feel less confident about that. I feel very confident whether he's fired or he leaves. And Ryan Day leaving on his own is still the more likely scenario.
Sure.
That Ryan Day leaves on his own. And the NFL is interested in Ryan Day. He's going to be, if he wants to be, and maybe he, you know, gets it done at Ohio State, flips it back on Michigan, wins a natty, whatever. But the NFL is interested in him. He's a guy who's going to be one of those offensive guys in the NFL. And they love the offensive guys in the NFL. If he leaves for whatever reason, I'm very confident Ohio State will come after Mike Vrabel.
Hey.
I mean, like, again, I'm not saying the list is going to be one name. But if he's not at the top of the list, that's an upset and something has happened.
Wes in Clarksville on the text line says, I think we signed Tannehill to another contract after Tannehill takes him to the AFC title game this year. That's from Wes in Clarksville on the text line. We've talked about that before. Like, is there a scenario that Ryan Tannehill gets an extension? I think it's extraordinarily unlikely given the draft capital that they've used on Will Levis, but we have had that conversation before. What would it take from Ryan Tannehill to actually get an extension from the Tennessee Titans?
Well, look, yeah, it would be extreme, but they drafted Malik Willis last year, and they drafted another quarterback this year. So it's two things. It's Tannehill being just fantastic, and that translating into overachieving team success. And also, it's just through the weeks, through this time, through camp, in the season, Will Levis just, it doesn't look like, you know, maybe it just doesn't look like he can consistently harness that accuracy or whatever it is. They have questions about him. Those two things together, sure. I don't think it's impossible. I mean, again, the San Francisco 49ers, where one of the model franchises in this league, gave up the world for someone that they are like looking to discard now, you know? Not, they gave up the world 2 years ago. So, the idea that the Titans are just locked in because they moved up in the second round to draft a quarterback is, to me, a fallacy, and that's not how they should look at it.
Well, and, you know, talking about the competitive transition from Tannehill to Levis, whenever that takes place, the Titans, in my opinion, Joe, and we're going to get into this a little bit deeper in the next hour, but I think they're in a really unique situation from that standpoint too, is because it's not just about their young quarterback and how well he develops and what he looks like. That's the main part of it, obviously. But they're also, you look around the rest of this division, and there are two more young quarterbacks coming in right with him, in C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson. And, you know, if Will Levis is good, but Anthony Richardson is amazing, well, that changes the dynamic in the AFC South. If Will Levis is elite and Anthony Richardson and C.J. Stroud are terrible, well, then obviously that's going to favor the Titans. So it's not just the Will Levis part of this that we got to pay attention to here in Nashville, but there are two other quarterbacks and two other teams basically going through the exact same thing that the Titans are getting ready to go through.
Yeah, no doubt. That's going to be a lot of fun, you know, a lot of fun. And, you know, I think two of those three, the other two, I think we're probably going to see a lot of them this year. And you might see them take some rookie lumps, but just the who was it that said, you know, they're all trying to raise their quarterbacks. I love that. Was that somebody had that quote?
John McClain. Know,
like, John McClain.
Yeah, he was with us. He was like, who can raise the baby the best? That's what he said.
Yeah, exactly. I love it.
He's got a way with words.
He does. Oh man, I tell you what, wordsmith of all wordsmiths, John McClain.
I think it's a really interesting conversation, and we talk so much about what it means in 2023, but this is going to be, I think, with the roster that they've got right now, and like you said, the flexibility that they could have moving forward, this is going to be a really interesting transition period for the Titans. Derek in Nolensville says, I don't see how Tannehill even has an opportunity to succeed at that level with the roster that they're giving him, and I don't believe that Derek from Nolensville is alone in that thought.
No, but I'll go back to if the offensive line is dramatically better. Could be. I don't know. It's not like they'd signed a bunch of proven all pros, but it could be quite a bit better. That alone, that with Burks and Okonkwo taking second-year jumps along with an OC who's good, yeah, you could see how Tannehill would feel quite a bit better out there this year than last year. And that's not off the table. Give him a chance, and then can he elevate? Can he have, you know, his best year? Can he play like he did, you know, in 19 and 20? Better stuff around him then, but still, his performance, you know, would he have the opportunity to have a special performance? If all those things break his way, I mean, I think he'd have a chance.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on Vanderbilt being eliminated yesterday, Tennessee advancing to the Super Regional, and much more. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever?
Coming crew.
Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.